So I've been a pharmacist for 10 years now. And just like a lot of medical residents and physicians, we come out with student debt. So I came out with $250,000 of student debt to complete pharmacy school, which was 3 years year round. And when I graduated, I just said, okay, I'm making six figures starting and I'm $250,000 of student debt. And I was never taught a single thing about personal finance. That was my baseline. And that's a lot of people's baseline, unfortunately.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor!
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 Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Alex Schlow. How does going from working as an inpatient pharmacist or physician to scaling up to 90 units of real estate in just a couple years sound to you? Well, that is exactly what our guest today did. Dr. Stephen Nguyen, my friend, is a pharmacist who graduated pharmacy school in 2013, worked as a hospital pharmacy director for 5 years, and in that time frame has scaled to over 90 units of real estate, two apartment complexes, a mobile home park, five single family homes. In this episode, we learn all about his journey, and trust me, you are going to want to join along and hear about his journey and his rapid growth in real estate. He is one of the best teachers I've heard, and we talk a lot about that. He gives us so much knowledge on investing in multifamily. We also have the age-old debate on what's more important, cash flow or equity. And Stephen makes a good argument for why equity may be more beneficial for folks and how you can use equity, especially in these high appreciation markets such as California, to help you buy more properties, maybe in a more cash flow market. So if that sounds interesting to you, and trust me, it should, you're definitely going to want to stay tuned to this episode. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. Today we have my good friend, Dr. Stephen Nguyen on the podcast. He's a clinical pharmacist and he's just crushing it in the real estate investing space. This episode is going to be incredible. So let's get started. Stephen, how's it going?
Hey, Alex. Great. Excited to come and share my journey. I know you went to my podcast, so definitely excited to return the favor and be the one to talk this time versus ask questions.
Absolutely. I'm excited too, because I just kept getting these like little teasers and what you're doing and what you've invested in as we were doing the podcast that I was on. And your story, honestly, is way more impressive than mine and going to provide a lot of value. So thanks for coming on and sharing it with us today.
Yeah, no worries. Happy to share. And I always just say, I'm just one step ahead of everybody, just including yourself. So you'll be surprised how much you can scale in 8 months.
Yeah, so I'm excited to hear all about it. And I think the next 8 months are going to be really exciting and a lot of growth for a lot of people if they listen to some of the information that's going to be in this podcast. We'll just get started. If you don't mind, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Stephen. I'm a pharmacist. I graduated pharmacy school back in 2013. So I've been a pharmacist for 10 years now. And just like a lot of medical residents and physicians, we come out with student debt. So I came out with $250,000 of student debt to complete pharmacy school, which was 3 years year round. And when I graduated, I just said, okay, I'm making six figures starting and I'm $250,000 of student debt. And I was never taught a single thing about personal finance. That was my baseline. And that's a lot of people's baseline, unfortunately. We're the same boat. We had to get good grades in high school and college, pharmacy school, if you want to get a good job, medical school, same thing. So I just graduated and my focus for the first 4 years was literally to pay off my student debt. So I literally just worked as much as I could. And I did pay off my student debt in 4 years. So 250K in 4 years paid off because that's all I knew. All I knew was debt was bad.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 250K in 4 years is no joke. How did you do it? How did you save that extra money to pay off that debt or work more shifts? How'd you pay off 250K in 4 years?
Yeah. So what really helped me build my financial foundation, to be honest, was just not lifestyle inflating. Obviously, when I graduated as a pharmacist, I was still pretty young in my early 20s. So I didn't really lifestyle inflate. I just maintained that college mentality, room share, and you still can't eat Chipotle, stuff that's like really cheap. So what I did was I just created a plan. So I knew I was taking home like roughly around $6,000 to $7,000 a month. When I was renting, I just rented a room and that costed around $500. including utilities. And so I had a kind of a spread there, right? I had a spread of around 5,500. So at that point, you can figure out, okay, 1,000 for expenses to go out, eat, have fun, buy some stuff here and there. And then the rest was all savings. So that was about $4,000 to $5,000 a month in savings. And I just kept that over that 4-year span while also job hopping a little bit to bigger hospitals where they paid more. So I would go from like $1,000 take home to maybe $8,000. But my living expense was very similar and my rent was very similar. So that's how I started off. And I just automated that. So every month I just save and I would put extra payments into my loans. And another thing I did was I actually refinanced my federal loans. Interest rates were 7.5%, I think. For context, a mortgage is 4% back then. Federal student debt is higher. And I refinanced it from 7.5% to 3% using First Republic Bank. And that was huge, right? I dropped my interest rate by about 4.5%. Wow. So a lot more of my payments went towards the principal versus interest. And I was able to increase my income, continue my savings rate of about $5,000 a month. And you just kind of do the math. That's $60,000 a year. And you do that over 4 years, you have $250,000 paid off. So I know it sounds simple to say, but yeah, it just really requires a lot of discipline, to be honest, to do the plan, stick to the plan, and not be tempted to buy a new car, go on fancy vacations, and just ball out, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the longer that we can delay that lifestyle creep, the longer that we can delay the thought, hey, I'm a pharmacist or I'm a physician, I need to drive the fancy car and have the nice house. The longer that we can push that off, the better, whether that's paying off student debt or whether that's funneling all that cash into assets and income producing properties or investments, that's the way to do it. You did a great job and definitely took a lot of discipline, a lot of sacrifice over those 4 years. And let's be real, Chipotle is still fantastic though, whether you have a lot of money in the bank or a little. And so if Chipotle is ever interested in sponsoring this podcast, that'd be fantastic. It took a lot of discipline, a lot of time, and you did it, man, in 4 years, which is just incredible. How do you feel like paying off that $250,000 in 4 years set you up for success for investing in the future?
Yeah, for me, like honestly, when I paid it off, it didn't feel as good as I thought it would. I think I was just very immersed into the process. And like I said, it's just really funny because like even to this day, like I'm a pharmacy director and pharmacists report to me. And even my pharmacists that I just hired who are new grads, they have nicer cars than me. Like Tesla is really popular now in California. So like everyone has like a brand new Tesla. And even me, I'm driving the same car I drove back in pharmacy like 10 yeah. years later, despite building a huge net worth. After I paid off my debt, I just said, what's next? Okay, I had this huge goal and I just worked and slowly increased my income, moved up the corporate ladder to become a pharmacy director of a hospital. And I just said, what's next? And the most natural progression is you want to buy a house for yourself to live in, right? Because I didn't want to live with my parents anymore, or I didn't want to like share a room where I'm just paying like $500. I just kept the same mentality and I would just save up. In California, the average cost of a home is $800,000 to $1 million. So if you need 10% to 20% down for a primary residence, you need at least $80,000 to $200,000. Going at my savings rate of $60,000 per year, I knew it'd probably take me about a year and a half to 2 years to save for a down payment. So that was my next objective. Like, I just want to save for a down payment, continue exactly what I'm doing. And then I bought my first house for $800,000. I put 20% down. So it was $160,000. And what I did was I house hacked that property. So it was a 4-bedroom house. For me, I was just used to staying in one small, like 10 by 10 room. But on this house, I was living in the master bedroom, which was huge. It was like at least 600 square foot, believe it or not, like nice. Master bedroom. I had 3 other bedrooms and I just thought I'm used to having roommates because, you know, college mentality. So I literally just advertised my rooms on Craigslist Facebook Marketplace, which is like the new Craigslist. And I just said, hey, fully furnished rooms, you can rent it for $1,000, including utilities. That sounds a bit crazy for people, but in California, like the average 1-bedroom is at least, depending what market, like 3,000 to maybe upwards of 5,000 in San Francisco. So then that was pretty cheap. And I was able to lease out all the rooms. So I was getting $3,000 a month, which covered my mortgage, and I just had to pay the property tax, insurance, and utilities, which came out to be $1,500 a month. So I was still living relatively cheap. And in a weird way, I was paying myself because I'm paying kind of myself $1,500. So that's how I really got started. It was just very organic. I just wanted a place for me to live. And I just thought, I don't need 2,300 square foot for myself. So let me just rent out some of these rooms while I can still tolerate having tenants with me, right?
Yeah. House hacking is such an incredible way to get started. I know we talked about it on your podcast as well, because we still house hack our basement here in Colorado Springs and pretty much live from mortgage free in Colorado, which is fantastic and has definitely helped accelerate our investments and our ability to save by taking one of your biggest expenses and turning that into somewhat of an asset. So that's awesome. And I'm sure that's been really beneficial for you as well to continue having that savings rate and getting started into some more deals in real estate, which you really just took off on and had some really rapid growth. And I don't wanna understate that. So let's get started talking about, hey, what did it look like as you house hacked that home and into the future of your real estate investing journey? Take us there. Let's hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, let me share the timeline. I bought my first single family home, which I house hacked back in 2017, right? And I downed 20%. I only need to down 10%. I just want to do 20 because that's what I was trained to do, at least initially. But after that first property, I actually got another job near San Francisco and I couldn't do the commute. So I just said, okay, I want to buy another house where I want to put 10% down this time, because of primary residence, you can do less than 20% down. And I was able to find a makeshift duplex in San Francisco. It's actually more common. It's not a legal duplex in the tax record, but it had a separate entrance for a lower unit and a top unit. So I did the same thing. I got a house in San Francisco. It was $1.1 million. I put 10% down. That's 110K. And I lived in the upper unit, which was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. So I lived in the master bedroom, rented out the 2 other bedrooms for $1,200 each. And then the bottom unit was like a little own apartment complex, right? It had a separate entrance through the side. It had 2 bedrooms, a bathroom, and it didn't have a legal kitchen. It just had a wet bar. So a wet bar is just a sink. And then for the stove, you just kind of do the plug-in countertop ones that you can buy like Costco. So that's a difference, right? But then yeah. I rented it out to 4 college students because I was nearby SF State. I was renting it out, that bottom unit, for I think 2,800 to 4 students. Wow. So once again, between the rent from the lower unit as well the tenants sharing with me, I was getting around like 5,400 a month. And that once again covered my mortgage. I just had to pay property tax insurance, which came out to be roughly around like 1,500 as well. And then what I did was I just rented out the last house that I owned. But that house when I rented out, you know, California, unfortunately, prices are very high. The rent isn't as high as you would like to cash flow. So I was renting that one out and I was probably negative cash flow about maybe $500 a month for that. So that's my first step. And then in 2021, that's when I really started to scale. So in 2021, I relocated to Southern California, where I'm currently at. As you can tell from my formula here, I did the same thing. I bought a house for 10% down. This was during COVID. Interest rates were below 3%. So I literally got this house for $770K, 10% down. Interest rate was 2.7%. Back in 2021. Look at inflation today, right? It's not even near that. But I actually bought that house, had the intent of actually living in it, but fortunately was laid off from my job. So I had to relocate to another place. So I ended up just renting out that house completely. And then I rented an apartment for myself. And I just said, okay, I've been having roommates for the longest time. I want to enjoy myself and have privacy. I have a significant other, a girlfriend at the time. You want a little more privacy. You don't want to share rooms as much. So that's when I pivoted a little bit and just said, how can I buy real estate where it's a little more cash flow? Because California, for those who don't know, it's all appreciation. Like the first house I bought for $800,000 in 2017, fast forward till today, 6 years later, it's worth $1.3 million. So that's $500,000 of equity, right? But yeah, that property, as I mentioned earlier, it was negative $500 a month first probably 3 years. But when I refinanced it to a lower interest rate like I did today and I raised the rents, now I'm just breaking even. But I'm self-managing my property and that's not including granny cap at like any maintenance, right? But it's more of like a forced savings account is what I call it, right? Like in the Midwest, you can get $300 in cash flow, but the properties will never appreciate. Versus California, I could literally sell my asset, 1031 exchanges into a huge apartment complex and utilize my $700,000 to get a big apartment complex that cash flows. So, you know, that's why kind of my strategy is. So sorry, I tangented a little bit there. But in 2021, that's when I started to do out-of-state real estate. I looked in Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama. For those who don't know, that's a aerospace capital. There's a lot of rocket scientists there, literally. And I bought a brand new build for $260K and my rent was $2,000 a month. And I was cash flowing $800 a month. And that blew my mind. I was like, wait a second. I can buy a brand new built house, no maintenance issues for at least the next 10 to 15 years. There's still warranties on the property. This thing is being rented out for $2,000. That's close to the 1% rule. And I have property management. And I'm making $800 a month. I said, geez, I just need to buy 10 of these and I can replace my day job. So that was my plan, right? My plan was I'm going to take some equity from my single family home and buy 10 of these. And then I had the option to leave my day job. But all of a sudden, thanks to YouTube and bigger pockets and free content, that's when I learned about apartment complexes.
Yeah. I'm going to pause you right there real quick because, man, you blew my mind and I'm sure everyone listening. So we'll take a second to breathe, but I wanted to hit a couple things that you said that I think were important. First off, for folks that are listening that are in a similar position to Steven, there is a 0% down physician loan that does also sometimes work for pharmacists, physical therapists, dentists. So that's something to look into too, that you could potentially acquire one of these homes for 0% down and still house hack it. Probably is not going to cash flow as well, right? Because your overall loan balance is going to be higher, but that's still an option. If you don't have the cash to put down the 10% on the house in California, you can potentially do 0% down and you can stack those just like Steven did, move into another one, do the same thing, move into another one, do the same thing. So that's a great way to scale. And you did it too. You just put a little bit of money down, which probably decreased your risk and also definitely increased your cash flow going forward. What blew my mind was you said, hey, I was losing $500 a month on this property, $6,000 a year ballpark, and you have, what, $700,000 worth of equity in that home at this point. And all the time we hear cash flow, and I think cash flow is great for protection. It's great if you want to get out of your job. It provides that security. But you have $700,000 worth of equity just from buying this house that you can tap into to buy these bigger assets or to invest or to use that and put it in stock market or bonds or something that's safer that you can then draw off of if you want to still get that quote unquote cash flow. So I think it's really cool because a lot of time we talk about cash flow. I love cash flow, but what a cool appreciation play. And that's, correct me if I'm wrong, probably been vital to your success going forward, which we're about to hop into the apartments and the rapid scale there. But yeah, really cool story. And I think it can be replicated by folks listening to this. And man, the last 17 minutes, go back and rewind and listen to that again, because that was awesome. Thanks, Steven.
Yeah. And where I will say, because I have a high income W-2, obviously not as much as physicians, but I could take that negative $500 hit, right? I can take any hit. If there's any repairs I need to make that may cost $1,000 or $2,000, I can take that hit, right? Because yeah. I could take those hits and think longer term with the appreciation, because true wealth is made via appreciation. Because right. In the Midwest, people say, oh, I make $300 in cash flow. But guess what? If your roof breaks, you just lost all your cash flow plus probably future cash flow. Versus in California, yeah, if let's say I need to replace the roof, it's going to not be fun. It's going to suck. But I made $700,000 of equity. So knowing that in the back of my mind, I know that, okay, it sucks today, but look at how this laid a foundation for me. So it's, once again, it ties to that delayed gratification. But on the other side, you cannot stack a bunch of properties where you're negative $500 right. bucks a month. So that's what kind of led me to my next stage in terms yeah. of my investing.
Yeah, let's hit that next stage.
So basically what I did was, thanks to YouTube and all the free content that's out there, I basically learned that in single family home, it's either cash flow or appreciation, right? California is no cash flow, all appreciation. You pick a market like Memphis, Tennessee, it's all cash flow, no appreciation, right? That's single family home. You pick and choose one or the other. But with apartments, when I learned about this concept, it really blew my mind and made me pivot completely to apartment complex was for apartment complexes, the value is based in the net operating income, which is income minus expense divided by the market cap rate. So if you increase your income as you increase the cash flow, it actually increases the value of your apartment complex. So in a weird way, you have your cake and you eat it too. The more cash flow you get, it'll actually force more appreciation. Once I understood this concept, I just said, oh my God, I wish I learned about this sooner. And that's when I really dived in. What I did was joined a mentorship program. And then from there, I basically learned the basis of underwriting real estate. I learned how to set up a direct off-market mailing campaign. And the struggle that we have as a beginning investor, especially in multifamily apartment complexes, is they don't care if you own 100 single family homes. You have zero experience in multifamily. Because of that, brokers are not going to bring you good deals. And to be honest, from my experience, brokers don't even have good deals in the first place. The second thing is lenders will not take you seriously because lenders want a track record. They want experience. So you're stuck in that catch-22. How can I get experience? How can I have a track record if I can't even buy an asset, an apartment complex asset, right? It's just like, how can I get a job that wants experience if I can't even get the job or the experience in the first place? So instead of complaining about that. I just said, you know what? I want to go find off-market deals where I'm bypassing the broker and I'm going to find such a good deal off-market that the lender will not care that I have zero experience. So what I did was I sent out 300 letters a month for 6 months. So that was 1,800 letters. I was targeting Oklahoma City. And why I chose Oklahoma City, it's real simple. I had a really good property manager there. It's very landlord friendly and it's more of a cash flow market. I'll be honest. It's a very steady eddy market. Like when the market soars, it's flat. When it goes down, like right now, it's flat. It just steadily goes up a little bit every year, right? So it's a nice steady eddy market, which is a good complement to my California real estate, which is a little more volatile, right? So I sent out letters. His owner called me. He owned a 26 unit apartment complex. After some back and forth, I made an offer for $500,000 for a 26 unit apartment complex. And the rent roll was around 10K a month gross. And this just completely blew my mind. Like I just said, wait a second, all my single family homes I bought in California were $1 million. And I'm getting a 26 unit apartment complex for half the price. And in California, $500,000 gets you a condo. If it's San Francisco, you're probably getting a little shed under the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. Cardboard box, maybe.
Yeah, cardboard box that's a fixer upper, right? Under a bridge. And I just said, wow, and I can get $10,000 a month gross. And when I bought it, it appraised at $750,000. So that's $250,000 instant equity day one, right? So let's just take a step back. I'm getting $10,000 a month. My loan is $2,000 a month. The way I underwrite these deals is your expense is 50%. So you have 10,000 minus 5,000 in expense. You have 5,000 net minus my loan of $2,000. That's $3,000 in cash flow, right? And I only down about 125K, 25% down. So you do the math, right? 3K times 12, that's 36K. Divide by 125K, that's probably over a 10% cash on cash return. So I just said, wow, that's like a home run deal. But what made it even sweeter was the market rents. The owner was renting it at $400 per unit, all bills paid. Or sorry, it was $500 a unit, all bills paid. So all bills paid means that the landlord covers the gas, electricity, water, trash. In apartments, usually the landlord will cover the trash and the water. And usually tenants will cover their own electricity and their own. So in reality, the rent was $500, but after paying the utilities, like the water, the electricity, and then the gas, it was really like $400 or about $350. But the market rent, assuming the units renovated, is $700. So I could double the rents, right? If I double my rent, what am I doing to the value of my asset that I'm buying, my apartment complex? I'm doubling the value of my apartment complex. We backtrack. I bought it for $500,000. It appraised for $750,000 and had the potential to double my rents. So I can double the value to $1.5 million. But I'm going to have to go in and renovate the units. It's going to cost me maybe $10,000 to $15,000 per unit to renovate it. And then a new kitchen, new flooring, fresh coat of paint, new bathroom, everything, right? Basically, your cookie cutter modern apartment complex. And then once you get those higher rents, you just continue the process, right? You renovate a unit or two, rent them out, two more tenants leave, you renovate those units, repeat that process. So you fast forward to today, I almost am done renovating all the units. I think I have about 6 left out of 26. And I was able to actually renovate the units for 10K each. I was able to double the rents to 700. What we decided to do was not renovate all the units. We just wanted to keep some more affordable options that were like 600 bucks. But I was able to increase those rents and like I hit my goal and Oklahoma will appreciate over the past 2 years. I wouldn't be surprised once interest rates go down, like not current interest rates, but once they go down in a few years, I probably would have at least doubled the value of the apartment complex there.
That's incredible. You took ballpark, once you're done, 260K that you put into these 26 units to renovate them, to double rent, to gain $750,000 worth of equity or value, which is incredible. Yeah, it's mind-blowing what you can do with value-add multifamily and at scale, what you can do with that. And certainly a lot of work and time renovating these units. Going back real quick, did you end up billing back, charging RUBS for the utilities for these folks? Or is that still included in the rent for you?
Yeah, so what we did was we just had the tenants pay their own electricity, their own gas. We didn't bill for RUBS specifically, but the market was around 700 for my type of unit, which is a C-class apartment complex. And then in Oklahoma, they typically bill back for water and then trash. And you just increase the rent accordingly. Okay. So I know in California, it's very common where they'll just say, hey, on top of your rent, you're going to pay additional, whatever, 70 to 100 bucks as part of a RUB. So we just increased their rents to market value and made sure that they covered their own rent. So 700 was like top of market for my unit. So that's how we're adding value. Like you said earlier, it's In the beginning, it's a little bit rough because when you take over the apartment complex, what they don't tell you is I said that we have 10K. And the moment you take over an apartment complex, you have tenants stop paying you. You have tenants leave because you have a new evil landlord that's coming in that's doing renovation and they're going to raise their rents. They know they've been getting away with these cheap rents for the past 5 years because the prior owner had the property paid off free and clear and wasn't motivated, self-managing. They didn't want to deal with tenant turnover. So when you come, you're going to have people stop paying. They're going to milk it. You're going to send an eviction notice. They're going to walk out before you evict them. I was at 24 out of 26 units. Honestly, when I took over in the first 3 months, it dropped down to 15. As I mentioned earlier, I had $3,000 in cash flow. But if you have 9 tenants leave at $500 a pop, I mean, there goes your cash flow, right? So that's why you really have to think long term and you have to have that money up front, right? So I did have to do my down payment plus have the renovation cost. But what I was able to do, which I forgot to mention, was I actually asked for a seller repair credit from the seller. So I did a due diligence inspection. The roof was end of life. I needed a new roof. They had about 10 electrical panels that were recalled. So I got bids for all of those. And I asked them, hey, like, this is going to cost me $120,000 to fix. I want that credited back to me at the close of escrow. He said, no, this property is as is. But if you bring back the issues that's urgent and life-threatening, I'll consider it. So I just said, okay, I didn't need to replace the roof. Obviously, that's protection. Yeah. And the electrical panels are a fire hazard because they've been recalled. So that ended up being about $60,000. So I actually got $60,000 credited to me at the close of escrow, and it cut my down payment in half. So I had to come in with $120,000. But at closing, I only came in with 60K. And what was nice was I got to use that 60K to basically get a new roof and then place those electrical panels as I was turning the units. So that's how I was able to really leverage on the deal and get in there. I will say it's pretty challenging, but once you renovate one unit, it's copy and paste. Like literally how I renovate my first unit, all my other units look the same. Like you can look across my whole portfolio that I own. All the units look very similar. It makes it easier for the contractor. It makes it easier to buy supplies because you can buy in bulk, and it makes it easier for you as the operator. Cause I'm remote, right? I'm far away in California. I'm not in Oklahoma City, and I just know exactly what it's going to look like. They just pick progress photos along the way. But if you can do one deal like what I'm doing, and it may take me 2.5 to 3 years, and you do a cash out refinance, like I said, I bought it for 500. I'm putting in maybe let's call it 300 for renovation costs, all in for 800. It's worth 1.5 million. That's $700,000 of equity. You do a cash out refinance, 75% loan to value. You would have pulled back your down payment, your renovation costs, and probably some extra money on top of that. I've been doing this project for about 2 years now. It's probably going to take me at least another half year to do it. But unfortunately, interest rates are terrible right now anyway. So I don't want to refinance my 4% interest rate to go to 8%. I'm just going to sit back and collect that cash flow. Once interest rates drop, then by all means, I'm going to do a nice cash out refinance.
Absolutely. And the cash flow right now for you is protective. It doesn't matter what the interest rate is, your cash flow, and who cares? At some point, the interest rate's going to go down. You're going to refinance. You're going to pull that money out. And I'm sure you're going to put it into some more deals. Yeah, man, that's awesome. That's a home run for sure. Congratulations on that. Did you stick in the Oklahoma City market, or what was next after these 26 units for you?
Yeah. So after that, I admit I had shiny object syndrome a little bit. So that's what I dived into my mobile home part, which I own in Alabama. So it was funny. So I own a single family home in Alabama. So I was just looking on LoopNet, and what happened was I just was surfing. I was looking at an apartment complex in Alabama because I just thought, hey, I have boots on the ground there. I know the area. And I just stumbled across like a mobile home park. And once again, like it was $1.1 million. They wanted 10% down. The owner was going to seller finance the deal at $1 million, 5% interest only. And it's a 200 lot mobile home park. About maybe only 20 were occupied at the time. And I just saw this as a huge value add play where if I can go in, fix up the homes, rent them out, sell them, rent out some of the homes to lot rent, allow tenants to move their homes in and just pay me lot rent and just really turn around this park, I thought I was going to make a really big killing, right? This is a 200 lot park. If that park's all filled, I mean, that thing's going to be worth over $10 million and I bought for $1 million. So that was my second deal. And once again, my single family homes in California were $1 million. So once again, I was like, wait a second, I own 55 acres of land in Alabama, 200 lot park potential, and I can just bring in these homes and add units. With apartments, it's very hard to add units. Mobile home, as long as you have that lot ready to go, you just buy one of those brand new homes from Clayton or True for about 45K. You can plop that home there, and then you can either sell it to qualified buyers and they just pay you lot rent, or you can rent them out and then just collect the rent and be a landlord. Honestly, I thought that was going to be my golden goose and thought that, wow, you just do this park well, and you can get that park up to half, 100 out of 200, and that'll be easy worth $5 million. At that point, you can cash a refinance or flip it and sell it, and I could probably just leave my day job. So that was my mentality. And for kind of context, I closed on my 26th unit in August of 2021. I got the mobile home park in November of 2021. Wow. So about, what is that, like 3 months apart, I bought another 20, 30 units.
Man, that's incredible. Were you scared at all buying that mobile home park?
To be honest, I would say looking back, I definitely had the rosy colored glasses in terms of buying it. What I really underestimate about mobile home parks is how much operations it takes. Like, however, it takes 5 times as much effort and manpower and steps to stabilize a mobile home park versus an apartment complex. Apartment complex is, if you break it down, it's literally a box that people live in, and you just gotta renovate it and make it clean, functional, practical. And then after that, you just collect your rent. With a mobile home park, you have to manage 55 acres of land. What does that entail? You got to mow the grass. In Alabama, when it rains, that crabweed grows up to 5 feet tall. And so you have to maintain it. You have roads you need to maintain. You have all the street lights that you have to pay for. The lots, you know, you have to pay for all the water. You need to have an on-site property manager, a full-time maintenance guy, a landscaper. So there's just a lot of fixed costs that comes from owning 55 acres of land, which I underestimated a little bit. And then another challenging portion was property manager is much harder to find for mobile home parks. You can't just fire your property manager who lives in a park and then replace them the next day. With my apartment complex, I literally could fire my property manager today and I have 2 backups ready to go. With a park with mobile home parks, it's not that easy, right? You gotta interview some of the tenants that live there. There's not many third party managers, and a lot of times they're not gonna be good too because they don't want to deal with the mobile home park because it's a lot more work. And then managing contractors with mobile parks is way more challenging as well. Just because you can renovate an apartment complex doesn't mean you can renovate a mobile home. Different sizing, different materials. You know, it's a lot harder to source materials. You have to order from somewhere else. During COVID, it was hard supply chain issues. It took forever to get things made, get things shipped to you. Fortunately, you have a lot more turnover because in the mobile home park space, the general contractors, they want to be paid on an hourly basis. And you know the problem with that, right? Because whether you're working fast or slow, you're getting paid $12 an hour. So you're not very motivated if it's really hot and humid in Alabama to work fast versus if I say, hey, I'm paying you $2,000 for this project. Whether you finish that in 1 day or 20 days, you get paid the same money. So that was just a challenge that I faced. And that's why I understood why large syndicators, they have to have everything in-house and they're vertically integrated. They have property management in-house. They have renovation crew in-house. They have everything in-house and they're probably losing money on that end, but they're trying to make money through doing the value-added part of mobile home parks. So it was definitely a lesson that I learned. And then, but I think my initial intent was to do a cash out refinance on this to raise it up to 100. But once I quickly realized how time and resource intensive it was, I pivoted to just fixing and flipping it. So that's what I'm trying to do right now. I basically proved the model of how to bring in home and how much you can rent them out for. And I proved the model of renovating the home and how much that will cost and how much you can rent those out for. I'm hoping to flip that to a larger operator who has the capital to bring the park all the way and has the time and the resources, because I'm still working full time managing my apartment complexes and then doing this as well. It was definitely cool to step out into mobile home parks, but definitely learned my lessons in just staying focused on one thing. Don't have the shiny object syndrome and just do one thing very well. I have a really great team in Oklahoma City, so I didn't need to like deviate to another market and then deviate to another asset class. Just owning enough real estate in Oklahoma City, you can be very wealthy, right? There's a lot of real estate there. You don't have to deviate. But at the time when I bought it, obviously very excited, listened to a lot of podcasts. Bigger Pockets, Brandon Turner, he's really big on mobile home parks, but what they never tell you is how much work it truly is and the dark side about it. And I don't blame them because they're trying to raise money. But for me, by actually doing it, being in the weeds, I saw what it was like as an operator that, man, it's a challenging profession. I really respect it. But if you can make it work, the money is insane. Money is insane, but it's a lot of work, a lot of sweat equity. And given that I work full time, it just wasn't a good fit for me. So that's why I decided that I need to basically sell this park.
Yeah. Brandon Turner, if you're listening, come by my boy Steven's mobile home park and we'll just split the referral fee there. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. There's a lot of things I wouldn't have thought about. For example, the landscaping of 55 acres. And I'm from Virginia and I've spent some time in Alabama. They're probably mowing every day out there during the summer with all the rain and the heat and the humidity and the sun out there. I bet that grass and the crab weeds and all the weeds down there are just growing like crazy. So yeah, that's definitely something I wouldn't have thought about. As substantial of a landscaping expense as it probably is for you for that and all the other expenses. Good luck with that. And shiny object syndrome, I think it's something we all suffer from when we're getting started in real estate. And sometimes it probably takes longer than others to realize that's something that you're suffering with. I still have it, to be completely honest. I reached out to you about buying your mobile home park. And we're focused on assisted living, and that's our one thing right now. I still need to work on that. But I think it's probably helpful for you that you've realized, hey, this is something that I need to get out of or sell and really focus full time on these apartment complexes, which you're really crushing it in that space. What was next, or what is next after the mobile home park sells?
Yeah, and actually circling back a bit. Yeah, the 55 acres, the moment the guy mows from one end to the other, I take the week, he has to start over again. And then that's another huge expense. And then to cut down trees. So it's hurricane season, right? You have to trim down your trees. The power company will trim down the trees near the power lines. But the ones that aren't, oh my God, it costs $600-$700 to trim down these 100-foot trees. So these are expenses that they don't talk about you're hit with. So that's why I said there's a lot of fixed costs. But after buying this park, I did buy another apartment complex in Oklahoma. It wasn't Oklahoma City specifically. It was a smaller tertiary market called Enid, Oklahoma, which is probably about 90 minutes away, closer to Kansas at that border. And I actually got this deal from that same lettering campaign that I mailed back for the past 6 months. The guy actually sent me a postcard back with his number on it. And I called him and he just said, hey, I want to sell this park or this 20 unit apartment complex. I think 15 out of 20 units were occupied. He just was looking to sell it and then dump it into his business that he was doing and made an offer for, I think he wanted $400,000 on it. So once again, I was like, wait a second, 20 unit apartment complex, $400,000. This is dirt cheap, right? But no banks would lend on it. So the challenge I learned about investing in tertiary markets is a lot of banks do not want to invest in small markets, right? If it's less than $50,000, the loan size is less than $500,000. If it's less than 50K per unit, that wipes out a lot of lenders, right? A lot of national lenders, a lot of regional lenders. And what I really had to do was really engage the local lenders as well as work with mortgage brokers. So what I did was I pitched this deal. So I got it for under contract for $350,000. I literally went to my 10 lenders and said, at what price would you lend on this property? That's the price that the buyer would sell to me or the seller would sell to me at. So I literally said, all right, let's underwrite this deal together. I literally underwrote the deal together with the loan officer and said, all right, you want a debt service coverage ratio of 1.25%. Or 1.25. So that means that if your income must be 1.25 times more than your debt, your annual or your monthly debt service, you can work backwards, right? You take your monthly rent, taking an expense account expense. So it's usually around 45 to 55% for small apartment complexes. Whatever is left is your net operating income. And at that point, it has to be 1.25 times your loan amount. Or the monthly payment for your loan. So we came to the agreement of $350,000. So when I got the pre-approval letter, I brought it back to the seller and said, hey, I want to give you $400,000. Problem is no lender will lend on that, but I can give you $350,000. Here's my pre-approval letter. So he agreed to me. He's okay. So I wasn't trying to cheat him, right? I just wanted to solve the problem, get the deal, get this deal off his hands. And so I got for $350,000. And my plan was I actually got a hard money loan on it. So I did 25% down, which was around $80,000. It actually included $100,000 worth of renovation. So my goal was to renovate, use $100,000, renovate as many units as I could, do a new paint on the exterior, and replace the external staircase. What's crazy was during the due diligence period, I found out that one unit was completely burned down.
Oh, wow.
So he literally had a grease fire in the kitchen 5 years ago, and it burned down. For the past 5 years, he didn't bother to renovate it. On top of that, he didn't do an insurance claim. So what does that tell you? Number one, it tells you that he got cheap insurance. And how I knew he got cheap insurance because he paid $5,000 a year for cheap insurance. My insurance for that same 20 unit today is $13,000. And I got replacement cost insurance. So if that unit burned down, I'm going to get enough money to renovate that unit brand new to 2022 or 2023 standards. Right. So $40,000 was allocated to renovating that unit. And then the remaining $60,000, I wanted to use to renovate their other vacant units. Right. But once I bought the property, same thing. I bought the property, 15 out of 20 were occupied. After 1 month, I was at 7 out of 20. I lost 8 tenants, 2 stopped paying, or at least 3 stopped paying. I had a bed bug infestation because one tenant was letting homeless people stay in his room for services, PG, for services. And because of that, there's a huge bed bug infestation. And I had to fumigate all the units, which cost me $10,000. And keep in mind that best, if that thing is fully vacant at market rent, $500 per unit, that's $10,000. I spent 1 month's worth of rent just to fumigate the apartment complex. But I thought, hey, I bought this for $350. It appraised at $40,000. And at the time when I bought it, May of 2022, I thought after I was done with the renovations and raising the rents to $500 to $550, those are going to be worth $800,000, about $40,000 per unit. So I just said, you know what? Hey, this sucks today. But what's beautiful about renovating apartment complexes is I was still getting $3,000 a month and I was renovating the units. Single family homes, when you're renovating that home, you get zero rent until you finish renovations. You've done a deal. You renovated properties. You know that you get zero rent until it's fully done. With apartments, I'm renovating 13 units, but I still have 7 units paying me. So at least those 7 units was enough to cover my monthly hard money loan. So that's what was really nice about it. Went through, had a hard money loan. Fast forward to today. Hard money loan was called due, trying to cash out refinance during this market where interest rates soared significantly. For some context, my hard money loan interest rate was 9%. And guess what the regular interest rates are today? It's 9%.
Yeah.
So I was like, my hard money loan from a year ago is better than my loan today. So literally, I was trying to pitch it to multiple banks again. Had a lot of difficulty, right? Given this climate, given the high interest rates, a lot of lenders, local lenders, do not want to invest in deals and they scrutinize heavily. I was fortunate. I was able to engage Bank of the West, who I used to finance my 26th unit. And even them, I have an existing relationship with them. They're giving me such a hard time and they're scrutinizing my tax returns to a T. And as you can imagine, as somebody who's doing value-added real estate on a 26 unit, a mobile home park, and a 20 unit, my tax returns do not look pretty, right? I have a lot of expenses, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So they're giving me such a hard time. And my interest rate that I've been quoted was 7.5%, which is, you asked me a year ago, I'd say I'd laugh at you and hang up. Today, that's actually good, right? 7.5 is actually good. The hard money rates are around 13% for context. And they've got me approved for the loan. But now the struggle I'm going through is the appraisal. The appraiser, he appraised it at, I think, $520,000. And keep in mind, I thought this was going to be worth $700,000 to $800,000.
Yeah.
So to me, it sounds terrible, but I would probably have to leave, assuming I get that loan, about $80,000 in the deal. So I put $80,000 as a down payment, about $120,000 for renovation. So I get back my renovation money, but I just leave $8,000 in the deal. As you learn with the Burr strategy, like you cannot always pull out all your money. If it's a long-term game, if I leave $80,000 in the deal, well, in 3 years, interest rates drop back to 4%. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a cash out refinance, pull out my $80,000 at least, maybe a little more on top of that. And then be okay with it. So that's why I said like real estate's really a long-term game. Like all these hiccups that I'm having with my 26 unit, my mobile home park, trying to sell that and then doing a cash and refinance for my 26 unit or my 20 unit. Honestly, if I look back 3-4 years from now, it probably won't even matter. So that's been the perspective I've been having going through this period where I just feel like I'm getting hit left and right, like blindsided left and right out of nowhere. And no one could have anticipated interest rates would have gone this crazy. There's a lot of pessimism surrounding the real estate market right now compared to a year ago. And a lot of people are getting burned, right? If you got a variable interest rate loans and you're being called due this year, like you're getting hit, right? Who would have known in a year? Like I underwrote worst case. Okay. Yeah. Maybe it'd be 6%, whatever, right? I could take the hit. We got humbled real quick and interest rates are still going up. So it's been really interesting. So if you kind of backtrack that from 2017 until 2022, I bought 90 units in real estate.
Wow.
And in a span of 8 months, I bought my 26 unit, my mobile home park, and my 20 unit, right? So I scaled rapidly, which sounds impressive, but I will say it is a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. And sometimes it's not good to scale too fast too, right? So I know a lot of people You watch on YouTube, right? All bigger pockets. Hey, how I bought 1,000 units in a year. It sounds cool to say, but I know on the back end, they're putting out fires and fires on a daily basis. There's a large team behind it. Real estate's a long-term game. The longer you stay in it, the better you'll do. So for me, because I don't raise money and it's just myself, I'm self-funding everything. But you don't need to go that fast. You don't need to scale as rapidly. You just got to go at a steady pace and just slowly stack up those base hits, right? You don't have to hit home runs every time. My 26 unit, I'd probably call that a home run. Mobile home park to be determined. It would depend on what the sales price is. And the 20 unit, it wasn't what I expected, but hey, instead of hitting a home run, I'll hit like a single or a double and then wait another 3 to 4 years, it'll be a home run. It just was very eye-opening to me that it's sometimes okay to pause and just really reevaluate what your portfolio looks like and see if it aligns with your current lifestyle and kind of aligns with what you want to do moving forward.
Wow. That was incredible. Yeah, so much there. I think a couple of things I was thinking about as you were telling your story and your journey, what really saved you probably was those letters, those off-market letters that you sent, getting those off-market deals and buying these properties at a great price really well. And that saved you from this market correction. Like you said, you underwrote with an interest rate elevation, but not to where it was. But yeah, underwrote to 6%. And here we are today. And 6% would be fantastic today. So I think that's something that's really important, making sure we're buying right. And value add is also forgiving, and time in the market is also very forgiving. So I think those were some key points that you hit on with all your deals. You've definitely hit some home runs, hit some singles, hit some doubles, and I have no doubt you're going to hit some more home runs in the future. What's the end game for you when it comes to real estate, or what's your ultimate goal with real estate?
Yeah, and to backtrack a little bit, if you buy off-market deals with equity day one and have the ability to raise the rents through renovation, you'll never lose, right? That is your safety net and your cushion and you playing defense, right? So even despite every worst possible condition, I can still get at least my renovation cost back. So I really wanted to hit that point home. But for me, basically my end game is, so I guess what I didn't mention was when I scaled massively in real estate is actually when I got laid off in pharmacy. I got laid off from a hospital job during COVID, and that's counterintuitive. Right. You would think that during COVID, you would need healthcare professionals the most. They're calling us heroes. You remember all those campaigns? Look at the doctors, nurses, usually get the most media press, but healthcare people were heroes. But it was me. I was like, I was collecting unemployment. And I unfortunately left a little sour taste in my mouth because I'm like, man, I thought healthcare is supposed to be stable. But in a weird way, that's when I really scaled rapidly in real estate because I had a little more free time, right, to be able to do that. But basically, my kind of end goal is, to be honest, it was initially, if you asked me a couple of months ago, to hit 20K a month in passive income by the time I'm 35 for apartment complexes in Oklahoma. It's around $200 per unit in cash flow, assuming after stabilization, after doing a cash out refinance. So if you kind of do the math backwards, it's around 100 units. Assuming I sell my mobile park, I have 50 units. So I'll probably get around 10K a month in passive income. But that my goal was to make 20K a month to replace my day job and basically be able to have the option to retire early. But I think given the market is not as great at the recession, I think it makes sense to just continue to work. So I changed my mindset a bit about early retirement. I'm okay with continuing to work longer as a pharmacy director for as long as I need to do, but still scaling my real estate slowly. And then obviously scaling social media on the side as well. So I think, because during a recession, you want to have extra money because then you want to pounce on deals, right? When deals become available, and they will be, creative finance is going to make a huge comeback because I'll be honest, after my experience doing this cash out refinance with a bank that I have an existing relationship with, I never want to deal with a lender again. I just want to go off market, direct to seller. Let's make it win-win for both of us. So I think it's going to make a huge comeback. So my next deal, the dust settles for me a little bit, aka I've stabilized my 90 unit portfolio. Then I'm going to start trying to get creative finance deals and use my same lettering campaign that I did and be really picky about what deals I get. I think just going through what I did gave me a lot of clarity in terms of how I want to invest moving forward. I just want to scale in Oklahoma City and just do small apartment complexes and gradually buy one or two every 2 or 3 years. And you can just stack that, right? Imagine you buy a 20 unit apartment complex every 3 years. In 10 years, you have 60 units and you're doing cash out refinance on each one every 3 years. Your snowball of money is going to stack up. So eventually you go from a 20 unit to a 40 unit to an 80 unit. And honestly, that's way more wealth than you'll need just to leave your day job and to have a pretty good lifestyle that is pretty carefree, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt you're going to get to that 20K a month and probably really soon at the pace that you're going. And when you do, let's have you back on because I want to hear how you did it. Because this has been awesome, man. It's been so much value. You mentioned social media and we've also talked about your podcast. Do you mind sharing with the audience how they can reach you a little bit more about your podcast and then your awesome multifamily mentorship and academy that you have?
Yeah, so you can reach to me at Stephen D. Nguyen on YouTube. And then on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, all the other socials, it's Making Multifamily Money. I give you a link to my link tree, which actually has all my links. And then I actually host weekly mastermind sessions every Wednesday. Or no, I moved, but it used to be every Wednesday at 7 p.m. They're now on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And it's actually a free mastermind group where I just kind of do a little teaching. And then at the end, I do a Q&A session. So it's free for anyone who's interested in wanting to learn about multifamily, or maybe they own a bunch of single family and want to transition to multifamily, or just like to learn and be surrounded by like-minded people. I do offer this session where I do record it, upload it to YouTube. But as you mentioned, I do have a podcast as well. You're on one of my episodes for that, but just looking to bring on others to selfishly for me to learn about other asset classes and to get the shiny object syndrome out of my system through other people. So I'm living through assisted living through you. As you kind of mentioned, I do have a Making Multifamily Money mentorship. So I just compiled this mentorship program. It's a course lecture based. Combined with, we have weekly sessions where you can come on and ask me questions, do a Q&A, but I really condensed my 5 years, 5-6 years of real estate experience, all the pains I went through buying 90 units of real estate, and condensing it all that into a course and a mastermind where you can my mistakes. As I mentioned earlier in my story, I spent $7,000 trimming trees, $10,000 fumigating for bed bugs, and made every single mistake under the moon. So if my mastermind can help you reduce one mistake, it essentially pays for itself. And for me, I'm actually the operator and the owner. So I know the weeds, right? When you invest with a syndicator, usually you're just talking to the marketing guy who knows nothing about how to operate the deal. He just is pitching, unfortunately, a pitch deck that they memorized. I'm sure you heard a lot, Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Being a physician. And they just say the cookie cutter thing. Oh, we love mobile home parks. Oh, we love this market. Oh, we love this. Yeah. But they don't talk about the reality of it. And for me, being in the weeds, I know the reality of it. And worst case, if you join the course, the mastermind, and you realize that you don't want to be an operator, you will have this, you'll be equipped with the skill set to vet syndicators, because that's also a skill as well. And it's something I might do as well, where when I don't want to be as active, doing huge active deals, like maybe I don't want to buy mobile home parks myself, but I know how to vet a mobile home park syndicator to invest with them as a limited partner, which is more passive. Nothing was wasted for me. So worst case is you learn how to vet a syndicator, or you just realize that, hey, real estate's not for me. And once again, if you mess up in real estate, you'll lose a lot more than what you invest in terms of your own self-education. I'm a pretty big proponent of self-education. Helped me scale to where I am today, and it helped me be accountable. I'm a really big proponent for it, being a pharmacist. And as a doctor, we do something called layered learning, right? Where as a first-year resident, you're learning from a second-year resident. A second-year resident learns from a third-year resident. A third-year resident learns from an attending. Same thing with a mastermind. You're just learning from someone like me who's one step ahead of you, where I'm literally in the weeds of doing a cash out refinance of apartment complex, so that if you're 6 months behind me, you will know all the pitfalls ahead of time, right? Yeah. And know how to navigate that as well as leveraging your resources. So it's nice to know that you're not alone, that you have someone to bounce ideas off of. Because believe me, even me, like when you're under the stress, you don't sometimes make the best decisions. So it's even nice to bounce things off even my mentorship students to say, hey, remember, this is what you taught us. Why aren't you doing what you taught us? That's what's been really rewarding for me. It's just to really share my knowledge and teach back and help others achieve financial freedom through real estate.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's very evident talking with you just how incredible of a teacher that you are and the willingness that you have to share and to teach others and to pull others up with you and get them that next step up in their journey. Like you said, yeah, guys, if you want to grow, if you want to scale rapidly, if you want to learn from one of the best, check out the, gosh, I just blanked on the name. I'm sorry. The Multifamily Mentorship. And check out the Multifamily Mentorship, join it. And I guarantee you're going to grow just dramatically, not only in your real estate life, but also in your personal life. Cause I know Stephen well, he's a great guy and it's just going to be so impactful for all aspects. So make sure you join Multifamily Mentorship. Well, Stephen, want to be respectful of your time. Really appreciate you coming on the show. This has been awesome. I've learned so much and we're going to have you on again once you hit 20K a month in passive income here soon.
Yeah, definitely excited, but happy to come on sooner if it takes me a little bit too long.
Absolutely. No rush at all. No rush at all. Well, thanks again for your time. With that, it's been Dr. Stephen Nguyen and Dr. Alex Schlow with another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast, signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance and talk to you on the next episode.
Please note that information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.